Life in this prison has been anything but easy. On a daily basis, it's like part of my heart is being stolen, and my will to live and my identity, it seems like it's being chipped away and broken down on a daily basis, on a moment-by-moment basis. And I can't remember anymore. It seems like this prison is all I know. So long as I can remember, all I know is the memory of these walls that are around me. I feel so hopeless, and it's so dark. But escape is possible. It's gonna happen. I think the timing is right, and there is almost before me an opportunity, and if I'm sharp and aware, I'll be free. The battle out of this prison cell is real and arduous. It's intense. It's relentless. I can't stop, but it seems like every single step, every bit of progression is slow and painful and fought for. But finally, the moment comes when I pierce this darkness and I step out of this prison cell, and for the first time in my memory, I breathe my first breath of fresh air, and there's relief, and there's life, and I'm new again. Now, I'm talking about the butterfly's escape from the chrysalis. However, if you were thinking about the coronavirus, if you were feeling imprisoned by all that, I do have some good news. Governor Inslee is providing us some opportunities. Now, Clark County is behind, so we can't really say when, but there is an opportunity before us, not too far from this moment, when we actually get to meet face to face. When that happens, we're going to continue to maintain an appropriate distance from one another. We're still going to ask that you wear masks because, here, let me be candid. When I finally get to sing songs of worship with a community of believers, it's entirely possible that spittle may come out of my mouth. So if I have to wear a mask, you have to wear a mask. And we're going to sing, and we're going to rejoice, and we're going to celebrate, and we're going to use hand sanitizer. And our worship services are going to be shortened. And there won't be any children's classes or teen classes, but it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be meaningful and rich. We'll be meeting at the Vancouver Tech Center on Southeast 34th. If you live in the Portland-Vancouver area, I invite you to come. If you discovered the Renovatus community, or if you've rediscovered the Renovatus community, this has been beautiful and remarkable, and I'm just so pleased at what God's been doing here. But this is a community. I want for us to ramp it up one more notch as we get to hear one another's voices in worship, as we get to pray with one another face to face. And so I want to, if you're just discovering this community, I want to encourage you to keep an eye on our Facebook webpage, on our website, also www.renovatus.com. We're going to be meeting outside, so bring a lawn chair or chairs, bring a blanket for you and your family. I just want you to think in terms of if you've enjoyed this, think about the beauty that's going to be renewed when we get to meet together. So keep your eyes peeled, pray hard. We have this beautiful thing, and I think it's worth praying about. God, Churches all over the country are now finally meeting again, and I ask that you call us together. I ask that you give us opportunity to see one another's faces again, at least this much of it. God, would you allow us the privilege of worshiping you, not just in our hearts, but as our hearts mingle together in community. That's what we were made for, and Lord, though that's been a longing of our heart, it's been made so clear and so evident during this time of quarantine. So we give all of this to you. We trust you and we trust the process. We give it to you, God, and ask that you work out all the kinks because you're good. In Jesus' name, amen. The destiny of every butterfly is outside the cocoon. You were made for what happens after the chrysalis. Butterflies are made to fly. It's their design. It's not even in the nature of a caterpillar to remain the same. The flight is a beautiful thing, but the fight is a necessary thing before every butterfly. That is, a butterfly that is helped out of the cocoon is destined to die or destined to be maimed and deformed the rest of his existence. It isn't likely that a butterfly that is helped along the way, a butterfly that doesn't engage in the fight to release, to escape from the prison of the chrysalis, will continue to exist. And so tonight I want for us to consider the fight. Consider the battle that is before us. We live in a culture that thinks that life should be battle-free. And we work hard to protect ourselves and to protect our children and those around us from difficulties. But the truth is, they do something to us. They do something for us. They do something in us. Let me illustrate it with this. Her name was Ella, and she was born into a world that spoke to her heart of love and mercy. Her parents adored her and communicated it to her clearly. She got the message even at a young age. But her battles were real and began at a young age when, at an age way too young, her mother died. In his grief, her father, though he loved Ella desperately, the loneliness and the fear took over. And so he found another woman. It wasn't long after Ella's mother's death that he found a woman who was also raising children. And so they married, because Ella's father worked outside the home often and a lot. She was raised by her stepmother and raised with her stepsisters, Drizella and Anastasia Tremaine. And Ella's world got smaller and smaller and more confining as the stepmother was intent on raising her daughters, but saw Ella as an intrusion and a picture of what her daughters were not. And so finally, she was confined to one corner of the room, near the fireplace, near the cinders, and that was the life in the world of Cinder Ella. It was hard for me as a child to listen to that story and wonder, Cinderella, why don't you just look into a mirror? Just look into the mirror and see your beauty. Listen to your words that are filled with grace and mercy. Yes, you did lose your mom. And yes, you did lose your father. And the abandonment is real, but all it takes is a mirror. Anastasia and Drizella were formidable enemies, driven by pride and jealousy and vindictiveness. They were cruel, and the cruelty was relentless. And so she was no longer truly a part of the family. In reality, she was a servant. But somehow, in all of the trauma and all of the pain, she held on to the mercy that she learned as a young girl, the kindnesses and the forgiveness. She maintained who she was on the inside, although it wasn't really reflected on the outside. Until that moment when there was intervention, and her perception was the intervention was the fairy godmother that stepped in, and because of magic, she was made beautiful and she was transformed. And maybe you thought also it was the magic, but I've got a new thought for you to consider. Maybe it wasn't the magic. Maybe it was the invitation offered by the prince. Maybe her transition and her reclaiming of beauty was the reality that was always aimed at her, and what caused her to break out of that cocoon was the call to royalty. Let's dispatch this idea that we live in a world that is hopeless. Is this a good week end for us to comment about the darkness of this world? I want to aim you at a verse in Colossians. This study called Conflicted has been taken specifically from the book of Colossians in the New Testament, and Paul writes to this city, and in chapter 1, verse 6, he says these words: "The good news about Jesus that came to you is going out all over the world. It is bearing fruit everywhere by changing lives, just as it changed your life from the day you first heard it and understood the truth about God's wonderful grace." I submit to you that this world, as dark as it is and as troubled as it is, there are shining moments of hope all around us. And Paul speaks to a group of people that knew some darkness and knew conflict and were troubled by some things in the world around them, in their own faith community. And it really does suck the life out of you. Have you had any life sucked out of you this week? Have you wagged your head and thought, can it get any worse? By the way, don't ever ask that question. Can it get any darker? Yeah, it really can, and it really might. But the truth is this: God is faithful, and what he says to the Colossians, he says to you, and that is, what changed you is going out, and it's impacting other people. And the heart of that good news is found in God's wonderful grace. Guys, our hope is not in social awareness. Our hope is not in the government either stepping in or stepping back so that the world were a better place according to how I think it ought to be. And you can lean into that and you can invest in that, but it's not going to change the reality. The reality is his mercy and his grace, that's the source of any hope we're ever going to find. That evil stepmother and those wicked little stepsisters, they did their best to keep Ella away from royalty, away from the prince that would change her life forever. And that is the business of Satan. The battles around us are evil. There is evil. There's hardly a person in America right now that is going to be going, I'm not sure, because we've seen some awful things happen recently. It is a battle. But let me tell you what we're not going to talk about this evening. This is not going to be a conversation about spiritual warfare where the preacher says to you, okay, armor up, be strong, find your courage, fight back. The battle is real, but if you'll give me permission, in the next few minutes, I'd like to recontextualize the awfulness. The troubles that are in my world, the hurts and the wounds that are in your world, they're real. Satan is real, and he's coming after us right and left, whether you acknowledge it or not. As a matter of fact, there are cultures in this world that see evil as having personality. And in those cultures, I want you to know Satan is real, to be right up in their face and say, oh yeah, I'm here and I'm coming after you. But we live in a Western culture that is in denial over the reality of evil, evil that has personage attached to it. And so we make Satan and his minions a religious myth that we use to dismiss and describe bad things that happen in a difficult world. In this recontextualizing, let me submit to you that the butterfly's energies that are expended inside the chrysalis, that will break it open, that will find freedom, is the journey to the ultimate beauty that is before this beautiful creature. The transformation from an egg to a caterpillar into the chrysalis, where he is reduced to soup and reformed and reshaped into something that is totally different. That moment when it begins to break out, the fight that is real, the battle, the exertion that it takes, it's part of a beautiful process. Satan fought this battle against heaven, and he did his best, and he lost. His next line of attack was to go after the very Son of God. And he took him down piece by piece, bit by bit, and eventually took that man to the cross. And finally, when Satan and evilness got that dead man into the grave, he dusted off his hands. But God was not done. And the Spirit breathed life into that body. His best effort, again, was thwarted. Now his only effort, all that is left to him, is to attack those people that are made in the image of God. I don't know what your belief system is, but I know you're made in the image of God. I know what a rat let's not talk about that person in your life that really you can't see any human value to, that he's just taking up space and she's just breathing air and wasting, you know, a perfectly good life. They're still made in the image of God. What if we started seeing Satan as the ultimate loser, the one who has no hope, and all he's going to do between now and when the party's over is to take as many down with him as he possibly can? What if every single time Satan makes his best effort to attack humanity, every single time God steps in and says, I'm going to do something beautiful out of this. And even the death of Christ was part of his ultimate plan. I don't think God punishes people like that. I don't think God is responsible for, an ugly pandemic. I don't think he pronounces curses on a people or on a culture in order to straighten them up. But when the enemy does something awful like that, I think God is faithful to say, I can do something with this. I have a plan. I can take these awful circumstances and allow this battle and allow this fight to cause my people to emerge from the darkness, not just better, not just barely alive, but it's something that is beautiful, something that is their ultimate destiny, their original purpose. I think God has a handle on all of this. The rub is, once we recognize the enemy's tactics, we sort of get fixated on his presence and his evil. We tend to become obsessed with what's his next attack going to be, and we sort of get consumed with our anxieties and fears over what might happen next. There's this beautiful story at the end of Genesis, the very first book of the Bible. The main character is a guy named Joseph, and he loved God, but he was confronted with evil. He had a handful of older brothers, and they were evil. They did awful things. They said awful things. And in the middle of this story, they come up with this great plan to kill their little brother. Did I mention evil? They were going to kill their little brother, but it gets a little bit more creepy when they think, wait, instead of kill him, why don't we make a few bucks and sell him to these slave traders that are passing through? And so they sell their little brother. They lie to their father. They bring back his garment with goat's blood on it and say, we found this in the desert. He's gone. Father deals with this deep grief. These guys go on, rid, they think, of this young man. But the truth is, God used this evil moment for something beautiful. As a matter of fact, it's rather historic because you'll have to read the story yourself. Because this kid ends up advancing to the point that he is the second in charge of one of the area's most powerful nations, and that is Egypt. He's not even Egyptian, and he's second in charge only to Pharaoh. And he tells Pharaoh, God has told me that a famine is coming. And Pharaoh believes him. They act in obedience. They begin to store things up. Joseph is in charge of that. He's now living the life of an Egyptian. He makes it possible to save not only the nation of Egypt, but all of a sudden those nations around are starting to look toward Egypt to say, maybe we can make a deal. And so Joseph's brothers are back in the scene, and they go to the man in charge and they say, we have a father back home and a little brother. And, well, he's a grieved old man because he lost one of his sons long ago. And Joseph is listening to this story because now he looks like an Egyptian. And he plays the part. He doesn't even speak their language, his own native tongue, but he speaks Egyptian and uses a translator. And he saves his own family. You got to read the whole story, but finally in the end, he reveals himself to his brothers. They're filled with joy, but there comes a moment later on when their father dies and they're thinking, he was the only thing that was keeping us alive, and now Joseph is going to pay back. And Joseph says something beautiful in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. Genesis 50, 20. You need to write that down because you need to learn that and hear that. He says this. What you intended to harm me, God intended for good. Intent. Bad things happen, but God intends to bring something beautiful out of this. What if the struggle out of the chrysalis, what if the spiritual warfare that comes your way, what if the attacks that happen in your life that are so real and so devastating, what if God has an intention in your life? What if? That's a beautiful thing because that gives me permission in those moments when I want to get fearful about an enemy that knows where I live and is coming after me. That because I'm made in the image of God is intent on taking me down, what if instead of me responding to the enemy with fear, what if I recontextualized that and thought, so, this isn't so much about Satan as it is about God. What if God intends to take the most awful evil in a person's life and says, I can do something with that? This is a verse that I'd never heard in these tones before. This is a prophecy from Isaiah, chapter 14, verse 16. And listen to how Isaiah describes Satan, speaks to him. Satan, are you the one who shook the earth and made kingdoms tremble? The one that made the world a desert and who overthrew cities and wouldn't let his captives go free? Now, we stare at you, and we ponder your fate. Dude, you were so awful and so terrible, but pal, we're now got a different picture of you, a different perception of you, and we're going, oh, you were so awful and so powerful once, but now we're the ones that are looking at you going, geez, don't stand too close to him. This is not going to be pretty. Does that give you a little bit of hope? The challenge is to change our mindset. Now, it's helpful with the butterfly imagery because a caterpillar and a butterfly are just not the same bugs. There's something that transforms. There's some building blocks that are similar. There are butterfly building blocks in every caterpillar, but the truth is, it was destined to be the butterfly. So, this is your destiny. This is who you were made to be. I just want to encourage you to invest in what's the truth about you. I want to encourage you to come to a place where you think nothing else matters except who I am before that God. So, I want to read a few passages. We're going to close by looking at Colossians. And in these passages, I don't want you to open your Bible. As a matter of fact, I want you to go into your cocoon. As a matter of fact, I want you to close your eyes as I read to you. Close your eyes and be in that chrysalis and quietly absorb these truths. Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. Since you have been raised to new life with Christ outside the chrysalis, set your sight on the realities of heaven, your future, where Christ sits in the place of honor at God's right hand. Think about the things of heaven and not the things of the earth, for you died to this life, to caterpillar life, and your real life is hidden with Christ in God. And when Christ, who is your life, is revealed to the whole world, you will share in his glory. Open your eyes. You were made for glory. Could I repeat myself? You were made for glory. That's what your destiny is. That's what the building blocks within you are saying. That's why when you do things that you know are wrong, violate your conscience, say things you shouldn't say, the reason why it feels wrong is not because societal pressures or religious pressures. It's because there's some building blocks in you that are saying, wait, this isn't who I am. This doesn't describe who I'm supposed to be. I want to challenge you to live there, to park there, to remind yourself of who you are being created into. You, my friend, are a citizen of heaven. That's what you were made for. You don't have to choose it. You're not a puppet. You have choices. Stop listening to the old scripts in your life. Stop listening to those stories from your past that try to determine who you are according to what you've done, what's happened to you, how others defined you, what you feel, and what your emotions convict you of, when it may not be the thing that you were designed for. You don't have to stay inside the cocoon. You weren't made for the darkness. It is not your destiny. But Kevin, you don't know my story. I don't have to know your story. What I do know is the one who wrote your story. And what's remarkable in this story is this. He not only is the author of the story, he chooses to become one of the main characters in this drama. He steps into the story and he has made provision for you. That's what I know about you. Nope, don't know your story. I just know the one who wrote your story. That counts. So stop walking and start flying. That's what you were made for. Butterflies can walk, but wouldn't it be a pathetic thing? You know when those monarchs have their convention and there's tens of thousands of them that come together. Wouldn't it be sad if they walked there? Streets were filled with walking butterflies. Oh, no, the beauty is in the cloud, is in the church of butterflies that are flocking together and doing church at the Vancouver Tech Center on Southeast 34th Street. That's the beauty. I should mention here that upon emergence, the butterfly doesn't fly immediately. It takes time. She comes out of the chrysalis, and she's wet, and she needs to have time to dry off. And so she sits still. She allows times for muscles to move, muscles that have never been used before, but are about to take her into the air. She needs time to allow blood flow to get out to the very tips of the wings. She needs time. So don't beat yourself up over not being able to fly at this moment. Don't feel like I'm a butterfly that's walking and this is now my destiny. It's just not true. I'm just saying give yourself some grace and give yourself some mercy and close your eyes again. Close your eyes. Let me read to you from Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 through 11. So put to death the sinful earthly things that are lurking within you, having nothing to do with sexual impurity, with lust, with corrupt desires. Don't be greedy, for greed is worshiping the things of this world like an idol. God's judgment is coming because of these sins. You used to do these things when your life was still a part of this caterpillar world. But now is the time to get rid of weights like anger and cruel behavior and slander and degrading language. Don't lie to each other, for you have stripped off your old sinful cocoon and all of its evil behaviors. Relish your new life, your new nature, and be renewed as you learn to know your Creator and become like Him. In this new life, it doesn't matter if you are. Christ is all that matters. He lives in us. Open your eyes. My friends, live out of your new nature. Live out of not of your caterpillarhood, but of your butterflyhood. Verse 10 said, relish your new nature and be renewed as you learn. Did you hear that language? As you learn, as your wings dry off, as you flap your wings, as you get used to who you're supposed to be, don't panic about what you're not. Take delight in who you are right now. Take delight in what God is able to do in you and those moments when He actually does capture your attention and you're going, hey, I made some choices according to what I was created to be as opposed to what my past was. Okay, this is good. I just want to challenge you to engage in the process that He's calling you to. Verse 8 uses the phrase, get rid of. Again, it's a process phrase. It says, you're on this journey where you're walking away from things that don't help, things that describe who you used to be as opposed to what He's calling you into. He also says in verse 8, now's the time. Could I just say, now's the time. This is a good moment. Do something different tonight. Change a behavior. Commit an act. Do something that reflects, that's who I used to be, but this is who I'm becoming. Do something that says, I'm going someplace. God is going to do something, not because I've got life figured out, not because I'm good, but because He is faithful. And then Paul gets specific. He even gets a little bit nosy as he leans in and says, let's talk about how you act and behave. Close your eyes. Close your eyes as I read from Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 through 17. Since God chose you to be the holy people He loves, you must close yourself with tenderhearted mercy and kindness, with humility and gentleness and patience. Be tenderhearted. Make allowances for each other. Forgive anyone who offends you. Remember that the Lord forgave you, so you forgive others. Above all, clothe yourself with love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony, and let the peace that comes from Christ rule in your hearts. As a member of one body, you are called to live in peace and always, always be thankful. Let the message about Christ in all of its richness fill your lives. Whatever you do or say, do it as a representative of the Lord Jesus. Give thanks to Him, to God the Father. Open your eyes. Open your eyes and live with your eyes wide open. You've been called to leave the darkness. I challenge you to do this. You've been called, it's your destiny to fly. You are beautiful because that's what God is doing. He takes things that give, and you have something that is a lovely reflection of what He's doing. And before I turn you loose, there's one more phrase. This doesn't come from Colossians. Well, it comes from Cinderella, and that is, "And they lived happily ever after."